Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the show that brings you the leading voices of the social design movement from the fields of architecture, engineering, planning, art, and whomever else we can find that's out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Eric Kessel, and I am in a really good mood today because we have got a really fascinating show coming up. We left off last week talking with Aaron Seward of Texas Architect Magazine about monuments in Estonia and how to blow them up. And I actually opened this interview on the same subject. This week, we're speaking with Diana Buds, who is a design writer and producer working out of New York City. Her breadth is incredible, but I've always noticed a consistent thread throughout her work which draws out the social. She writes on design, but with a lens on equity, inclusion, politics, and social justice. If you're a fan of this show, you should definitely follow Diana, because over the years, her articles and works have given me a lot of food for thought, and this interview was no different. She tackles a lot of the issues that we try and tackle here at Social Design Insights. So we're going to be talking about how she selects stories, how she sets an agenda for journalism, and hearing some remarkable insights about the role of journalism in design. Let's get to the interview. Diana, hi. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I have been a fan of yours, and when we started thinking about this design journalism segment and basically the storytelling of social design, I wanted to get you on the show because I think of the way that you synthesize so many different topics and the way that you kind of draw out social and political ideas in writing about design at all scales. And there's so much to talk about, you know. I think with a career like yours, there's just a million topics that we could actually cover. But I thought a good entry point might be monuments. And I was particularly moved by the piece you wrote, I think it was last year, the Fraught Future of Monuments. And we had Brian C. Lee and Sue Mobley on the show. And, you know, they talked to us about the Paper Monuments Project. And that really kind of got my brain going. And then, you know, reading your article on top of that. What a powerful issue. And I wanted to start there because it kind of looks backwards and it looks forwards. I think it's also a statement on, you know, the nature and role and power of journalism because, you know, some of these monuments are sitting around for 50, 100 years and, like, we weren't really talking about it. And then all of a sudden, through the work of firms like Colocate and Monument Lab and the journalism surrounding it, importantly, I think it just, like, sort of took off. And we all just sort of, like, woke up and, like, we got to take these things down and we got to think of, like, something different. Am I reading that right? I mean, is that the role of journalism? Is that the mission of design journalism, is to kind of engage those issues and package them in a certain way that it wakes us up?
When I think about what design journalism should do, it's something that makes people more aware of the world that's around them. Because the things that we're surrounded with are all designed, and some of them, you know, with a lot more intention than other things, a lot more consideration, things that have a lot of meaning attached and ascribed to them too. I think that the more you know about the world, the more that you can engage with it in a meaningful way. In the case of monuments, you know, these are things that we pass by every single day. You might not necessarily know what they're about, what they stand for, you know, who they're talking to, what they're addressing. All of these different stories that are in a plaque or in a statue or, you know, just in these artifacts. In the context of, you know, what design journalism can do, it can say, you know, these are things that exist in the landscape today. And, you know, while the distance between the time from they were made and when we're seeing things, a lot of time passes, we might not necessarily know what they're about, but they are speaking to, you know, some political considerations. You know, a lot of the things that were coming up in the past few years are becoming more apparent in the past few years, definitely, you know, were being addressed through these monuments. And so, you know, with that story, we're just trying to say, you know, this is something that's going on. Let's try to understand how designers are grappling with this issue and, you know, potentially what that can teach us about our own history and where we want to go from there. It wasn't necessarily a story that said, take these things down. It's more, become aware of what's going on. And here's an opportunity to be more intentional about where things go in the future.
That thing about provocation, right, where a journalist can sit down and by choosing the frame around which they're going to look at the world and choosing a particular issue does sort of wake us up and remind us and show us something different. And as you said, so many of us walk past those monuments every day and never gave them a thought until you pick up a magazine and you read about it and you're like, oh, right, okay, this is part of the built environment. Mm-hmm. I guess that leads me to a more general question of, like, you know, how do you set that frame as a journalist? You know, how do you pick stories? There's a million things to talk about. What drives you?
I guess, you know, when I'm thinking about the types of stories that I write and what attracts me to a particular topic, I think, you know, something, you know, like what you mentioned before about raising awareness of what's around you and kind of saying, you know, like, this is your world. You know, the reason things are like they are is because somebody designed them to be that way or made it that way. Just as things are made, they can be unmade. So that's kind of how I generally was approaching stories that I write from this, the more you know perspective of, you know, the more you know about your world, I think the better it is to, you know, offer perspective about the things that you use every day, the things that you do every day, how you get around every day and so forth. But maybe it would help to step back a little bit. So I wasn't a person who wanted to necessarily be a journalist from the get-go or be a writer from the get-go. I became interested in socially oriented design and telling stories about it just because I cared about the environment, and I care about the world in which we live, and I care about how we relate. And so I came about this because I originally was studying environmental policy and kind of had this notion that, you know, if I wanted to make the world a better place, I should become a lawyer and then fight all the polluters that are kind of like, you know, giving us bad air and bad water and, you know, destroying nature and so forth, which I think is a kind of naive way of thinking about, you know, how the world really works. So I studied environmental policy with that notion and then quickly realized that a lot of the laws that are in place are not really there to protect the environment. And so I kind of got a little bit discouraged about it and was thinking that, you know, it doesn't make sense. I don't know if I want my life in this broader sense to kind of be fighting these battles over environmental impact reports and environmental impact statements that are basically stalling some action that's going to eventually lead to some kind of environmental devastation in a way. So I was like, okay, you know, probably can't save, like, I don't know how effective that would be, but I was thinking about it from another angle of, you know, if you can get people really excited about the things out there that could potentially make the world a better place and just get them to want it, then that might be one way to make the world a better place by just saying, you know, here are these really amazing, awesome things that you should be excited about. And if you want them enough, if our elected officials are doing their job right, they'll make it happen. That's kind of how, when I first got started, and I was thinking about where do I see myself in this bigger picture of trying to make the world a better place? That's a lot of times how I like approach some of my initial stories. Like, I remember the very first story that I wrote was on this David Baker project in Oakland called Tassafaronga Village. And So it was like this affordable housing development near the Fruitvale BART station. And I thought it was so cool. Like, thinking, like, I, you know, went there on like an architecture tour, and here he was talking about how they designed all of these bioswales and they, you know, put plants in them so they looked really beautiful. And then, you know, this is a way that, you know, the neighborhood would look great and also, you know, help with stormwater. And then talking about density, talking about giving people a space of their own in this larger context. So, you know, while, you know, it's not going to be as big as like, you know, a regular house with a yard, you know, there were, people still had access to some public space. And he was talking about, you know, maintenance and, you know, and all of these things and how this development would relate to the overall neighborhood. And it was just so inspiring to hear about the project and to hear about how they were trying to create this development with so much thought and so much intention with this greater mission of providing housing to people who can't afford it and also creating a great neighborhood. you know, in the Bay Area, you know, development is incredibly fraught. It's incredibly controversial,
I know,
to say the least. And so, you know, it's kind of that thing where, like, there's so much stigma against, you know, doing a lot of, you know, socially minded things, that if you can talk about these projects in a way that highlights the stuff that we should all be excited about, you know, that can hopefully spark demand, maybe not say spark demand, because that sounds kind of like a robot, but it can make us want these incredible positive things in our world. That's honestly how I approach a lot of the stories that I work on. It's finding people who are really driven, who are really excited about what they are doing, and who are really trying to make the world more equitable, to make the world greener, to make the world more livable, and, you know, trying to highlight their ways of thinking to get people as excited about it as they are.
What happened next? You wrote this one story and, you know, it was obviously like catalytic, and you just said, like, I'm just going to keep doing this from now on.
Kind of, in a way. I mean, there were some intermediary steps between then, okay. Between, like, you know, deciding that, you know, pursuing like law is not going to be a career and writing is another thing to do. But I was super, super privileged and fortunate to go to a university that had a good study abroad program. And, you know, one of them was called Sustainable Cities of Northern Europe.
What was the university?
UC Davis.
Okay.
You know, in that program, which I was able to knock out like a lot of credits, it involved kind of traveling to a few places in Sweden, in Germany, in Scotland, and in Denmark, and actually going to see what some of the more progressive cities and countries were doing in terms of sustainability. From a selfish perspective, I just really enjoyed going to these places and learning about them. And it's kind of like field trips. And so that was very personally satisfying to see all of these things and then talk about, you know, what I learned and like my, you know, our little weekly reports and whatnot. And so that's kind of what led me into, you know, even exploring journalism too. It's just like, you can go to a place, you can relay what you see, what you experience, what people are telling you about these things. And that to me was like, you know, incredible to think like, oh, there are jobs out there that allow you to do this. And I personally am learning a lot and I get to kind of share what I learn. So that's kind of, you know, what also had, you know, kind of kept me going in what I write about. It's me being very curious about the world and kind of like learning about what's going on and wanting to share that.
You're listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel. We hope you've been enjoying these thoughts from Diana Buds on how she sets the frame around her work and the origins of her amazing eye for stories. But we're going to take a quick break. While we're breaking, check us out on social media, where you can find out more about Diana and find links to her work. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Social Design Insights, and on Twitter at Social Design IM. When we get back, I'm going to pose to Diana a question that's been burning me up for these last four episodes, and, well, maybe my whole professional life. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Social Design Insights after the break. Welcome back to Social Design Insights. We've been speaking with Diana Buds about design journalism and how she gets to a story. I'm going to jump right in and confess a big gaping hole in my knowledge set. So here we go. So how does journalism work?
Like, how does the sausage get made? Like, how do stories happen? I mean, I guess if you're very fortunate and you're at a place that has a very big budget, you're able to, you know, visit those places in person. But often, you know, some of the best stories happen because, you know, what you yourself are experiencing on a day-to-day basis and what you see and, you know, what could, you know, spark a question that then could spark a deeper investigation that could then spark a story. I don't think that's answering your question necessarily, but like how stories typically get done now? I mean, or how I typically, you know, field pitches and so forth?
I guess my interest is in, like, how do we explain, you know, the absence or presence of, you know, a social interest in design journalism? You know, why does this story get covered and that story doesn't? Does that make sense?
Why does one story get chosen and why does another not? A lot of it kind of depends on the medium that you're using and, you know, how you see a story fitting in. You know, there are a lot of times that, you know, the honest truth about working in print is that you do often need a really good picture. And sometimes, you know, that's not available. And so, you know, thinking of the pacing for a whole entire issue, it's like, oh, well, we can't run this story in this section because we need to have, you know, some kind of art that's there. And that's just, you know, a very practical consideration, not necessarily on like the merit of a particular project or not. That's just kind of how the overall decision making happens. And honestly, there have been times where it's, you know, been frustrating when, you know, there's a project that, you know, I've really, really liked, or, you know, a story that I thought was really good. But then, you know, they're like, oh, you know, this image is not great. And we can't really show a rendering of this project either, because we don't know what it's going to look like. So that's another thing that can also happen in the lifespan of a project, where it starts out one way with a lot of good intentions, and somewhere along the lines, you know, maybe funding ran out, or maybe, you know, there was some other extraneous situation that happened and, you know, the project never completed. A story could fall off because of that too. In terms of when I'm personally like looking at something and trying to pick like a good story to cover, it's something where the idea feels fresh, it feels different, it feels like a story that hasn't been told a dozen times before. It's important to talk about those things. However, I do realize that there, you know, are some challenges with like kind of this preoccupation with things that are new. Just because they're new, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily better.
But wait, what?
Right?
Oh man, I gotta tell my students.
And it also kind of depends on the mission of the publication that you're working for. You know, I think like I've always been on staff. And so, you know, I haven't been in a place where, you know, I'm like a freelancer necessarily like pitching to different publications. You know, it's kind of thinking about, you know, what is the overall perspective of the publication that, you know, you're working for. You know, when I was at Dwell, a lot of the focus was on design and what quote unquote good design could achieve. But it was also a glossy design magazine. So, you know, it was there were things that needed to also have a certain sensibility that aligned with the rest of its sensibility. And, you know, as at Fast Company, the focus there was a lot on innovation. So there was a certain focus on, you know, things that were like especially creative, or, you know, doing something in a really clever or creative way. And now at Curbed, we focus a lot on the impacts to people and what the impact will be. There is a focus on telling these stories that are about people, that are rooted in where someone lives. That all kind of factors into how I'm thinking about what stories are good to talk about. Personally, I think that with a lot of stories about social issues, what ends up being a challenge is making people care about things that might not necessarily impact them on a day-to-day basis, or that they might not necessarily think about. So trying to find as many ways to make it relevant is something that I think about a lot. And that's where current events enter into the situation.
You know, making people care. I mean, how is that a challenge? I mean, is it the sort of thing where you write about a particular social issue and it gets less hits? Or is it like a process of, you know, making it sexy, you know, this kind of, you know, social justice issue that's out there? I mean, how do you approach that?
Those issues aren't new issues. They're issues that have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. And sometimes they just need to be recontextualized. I'm trying to think of an example. Like, there was a story that I wrote a couple years ago, and it was tied to a new collection of products that a MoMA store was selling. This is a design store that is selling, you know, products that probably no one really needs to buy? And, you know, what does this have to do with what's going on in the world? Like, what does this fruit bowl have to do with what's going on in the world? And I was working with, you know, talking this over with one of my editors, and we're like, there's like a lot of surrealism like going on here, a lot of tricks to the eye, a lot of this like really playful stuff going on. What's that about? And then saying, okay, well, if we're thinking about these as like being surrealist, what was happening when surrealism was happening? And so, you know, looking at, you know, what was going on in the 1920s and the 1930s, and lo and behold, there was a lot of fascism and, you know, a lot of parallels between what was happening in, you know, 2016. So that was a way to, you know, perhaps hook somebody who might not really be thinking about the politics of fascism and what that means to our society, but they could be interested in a pretty fruit bowl. So I don't want to say it's a bait and switch, but it's kind of like finding a story that these designed objects can tell. And when it comes to social issues, I mean, that's everything.
I like the approach and the idea that you can kind of find the expression of social commentary in a fruit bowl. I would not have thought of that. But as you lay it out, like it makes sense, you know, this idea that, you know, maybe journalism has that power to kind of open the door and lead us through things. Our last segment was actually on design and technology, and actually drew a little bit of inspiration from something you wrote about the seven trends that will augur the future of design. And it was all this cool stuff about AI and autonomous vehicles and things like that. And maybe it's a bit of a cheeky meta question, but what do you think the future holds for design journalism, especially as it's applied to social issues?
I think a lot about the future of design journalism, and I think in the future it will become less siloed. I think that a lot of the issues that we're talking about today in terms of, you know, housing, in terms of mobility, in terms of technology, it's really boiling down to design decisions. And, you know, we're seeing that in the context of thinking about artificial intelligence not as this omniscient system that does what it wants to do, but more as a system that humans are designing. When you kind of take that perspective, then you can see lots and lots and lots of opportunities for design journalists. When you look at a lot of the issues that we're facing today, many of them are consequences of design decisions. So decisions about how we built our houses, or decisions about how we designed our streets and how we constructed our infrastructure. And so if you are looking at transportation, housing, and infrastructure from a design perspective, you know, there are tons and tons and tons of opportunities to write about those things. I think there's also a greater interest in design in general, just in, you know, what people are putting in their homes, you know, what they're buying. A lot of that has to do with just the way in which companies are marketing themselves and really trying to make design as a part of their conversation. So I think the irony then is that the life of a specialty design publication might be a little bit more challenging, but the opportunities to tell design stories, I think, are richer because you can find ways to apply a design lens to many things that are impacting us today.
Well, that sounds like a really optimistic view, actually, that we might stop thinking about design in these boutique, siloed sort of ways and might be thinking in a more general way about the way that it affects our lives and the way that it creates good and bad outcomes for all of us.
Something that we did address and we did talk about is just generally what people think design is. And I think that there's a tendency to think about design as, you know, that fancy fruit bowl, or as, you know, this beautiful home, or this amazing garden, or a thing that advertises itself as being capital D design. And I think that what's really important to know is that, you know, everything around us is designed. And the more that we can interpret design as not these, you know, gleaming objects or special cases, and view design as just the world that we have around us, I think that's essential to, you know, pushing the capabilities of social design.
Yeah, and there's still large sections of the public and the design community that think about this design with a capital D. It's the fruit bowl, without understanding that the sidewalk under their feet, the restaurant they go to, the construction of the table that they're eating on, these are all designed things. They're the result of someone's choices. Who that someone is and what their choices are is something worthy of examination.
Definitely. And you know, something that I tend to like want to write about in a lot of the stories that I cover is diversity and inclusion in design. In order for design to move forward and to reach more people, and for us to think about ways in which design can, you know, potentially undo some of the challenges that we're facing, we just need to think about it more from different perspectives, to include more voices in it, and to really kind of tap into a lot of the creativity that hasn't been tapped into because of, you know, design's reputation as being, you know, mostly an endeavor from a certain social class or a certain race or so forth. So
old white males.
Yes. So in architecture, particularly white males. And I think that, you know, when writing stories about design and, you know, covering it from a business perspective or from an industry perspective, I think that, you know, that's something to think about too, because a lot of times we're just solving the wrong problems. In order to think about things, sometimes you need to find the real problem. And oftentimes, you know, it takes new perspectives to see what that is. Because a lot of things are, you know, the product of political systems and, you know, other structural issues. However, I think that bit by bit, if we can, you know, demand a better future, designers are there to show us what that can look like.
Well, thank you for leading by example. The way you select stories and the way you position the frame, the way that you kind of call attention to these sorts of issues, I think stands out for me. And I hope that design journalism continues on this trend. So thank you. Diana, this has been wonderful, and thank you so much for joining us on the show. I wanted to get your perspective on a lot of these issues because journalism is that lens through which we see all of design. You know, we don't get to visit 99% of the projects that we see. We see them through your work and the work of other journalists. So sharing this insight with our audience, I think, has been invaluable.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel. I'd like to thank my guest of the week, Diana Buds, for her insight into the world of design journalism and how stories get made. More than that, I thank her for the optimism in her work and how she helps all of us have a more progressive conversation about design. To learn more about Diana and find links to her work, please visit our website at currystonefoundation.org. If you have any feedback on the show, ideas for guests, or just want to chat, you can write to me at eric@socialdesigninsights.com. That's E-R-I-C at socialdesigninsights.com. Join us next week. We're going to be speaking with Spencer Bailey of Faden Publishing and Town & Country Magazine about his ideas on slow media. What's that? Well, you'll have to tune in next week to find out. Social Design Insights is produced by Baruch Zeichner, and at the break, we're listening to Back to Manhattan by Nora Jones, a song that always makes me think about choices. It's off her album, The Fall. Check it out. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation. And hey, we're on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Social Design Insights, and on Twitter at Social Design IN for all the latest news on social impact design.